Hi, ladies and gents, and welcome to the latest Trinity Tim's podcast. Tonight, I'm hosting, and I'm here with my colleagues, Eric Knott from the Celts, and Joe McCue from Video Celts. My name is James Forrest, and I'm of the Celtic Blog. Hope everyone's well. Hope everyone's had a good weekend. And it's been a busy weekend. We're back in action. The long wait is over. We're finally got some proper football to watch. Not that it was terrible at the time. We've been accused of being a bit down on the club in the last few weeks and months. And I don't think anybody who watched the game at the weekend can really claim to have been surprised. It was pretty downbeat. It was pretty poor in the final third. But these are all concerns that the manager's been highlighting for a while. And anybody who claims that they were surprised that we weren't exactly at our shimmering best is basically kidding themselves on. This is a team that needs a lot of work. I'm going to do something later on that a lot of people won't have heard me do before, which is criticise big Adam Ider. It's perfectly obvious that we are in need of serious reinforcements, and they're going to cost serious money. Fortunately, however, we're the richest club in the country, and we've got serious money if we choose to spend it. That appears to be the problem area. The game itself was everything we expected to be. I think at the end of last season, when they came to Celtic Park and they got the 1-1 draw, that wasn't a one-off based on the way we were playing. That wasn't a bolt from the blue type result. And we were lucky that day that Forrest got the goal late. Otherwise, presentation day might have been a bit of a damp squib. Flag day would have been even worse had we not scored late. And I think that the board were a mere 3 minutes from feeling some serious heat, because there would have been a lot of it generated in their direction had we not scored. In the aftermath of the game, of course, we've got the usual nonsense where people in the media are praising Steve Robertson and his team for having almost got the result. But I'll say one thing about Robinson and his team. If they were capable of doing that every week, they might have done better in the league. But if they did that every week, nobody would come and watch them play. I'm really tired of managers getting credit for playing that one-dimensional, terrible football. And the media shouldn't be giving us any encouragement, because although they got a result at the end of last season, although they almost got a result at the weekend, almost isn't good enough when you're playing for a European place or when you're trying out a title challenge. And that strategy against ourselves will fail 9 times out of 10. So you have to decide what kind of manager you want to be, and you have to decide what kind of team you want to build and the kind of style you want to play. That would just be untenable to play all that every week. So why do they play it against us? It won't fail 9 times out of 10. So 9 times out of 10, you're going to lose points. Whereas a team that shows a bit of adventure and comes at us a bit and is a bit aggressive about it, I think some of these teams have got a chance. I looked at the way Motherwell played against them the other lot at the weekend, and their second half performance was everything that St Mirren's performance yesterday was not. They were fearless, and they had a go, and they deserved what they got in the end, and they should have got more. Had the finishing been better on the day, they would have got more. But we'll talk about that in a wee while. Our performance was a bit flat. I expected it to be a bit flat. The mood in the stands was a bit flat, and I expected that. I was disappointed that Rodgers didn't change the playing style a bit, especially when we're chasing a goal in the last few minutes of the game. He's brought on young Johnny Kenny. I think most of us will hope to see Shinny Madder, but he's obviously not ready yet, which begs the question, when is he going to be ready? But it would have been nice to see both of them on the pitch, especially as we could have took off AJ, went 3 at the back and put on the second striker. I don't know why we didn't. Rodgers isn't as adventurous as he used to be. He's not as tactically willing as he used to be, taking risks. And there is, as one of our guys just said, an element of sleepwalking into danger here. And what's amazing is that some of the problems that are evident and became very evident on Saturday or Wednesday, on Sunday are ones we've been talking about on here for a while. It's very frustrating, very frustrating. And no signs of life at the moment. We'll get to the transfer window in due course on this show. But I wrote a piece the other week about how if the Ibrox club got their winger from Go Ahead Eagles, we weren't going to get ours. Or if we did decide to go in and make a serious bid, we would overpay for them again as we have previously. And that is now the reality. And if a pleb like me sitting blogging can see it, I don't know why the people at our club can't. But as I say, we'll get to that subject. Eric, what did you think of the weekend's performance? What did you think? Opening day of the season, although not on the opening day of the season. Someone else will have a minor modest rant about first. It's bollocks of having the Champions play second. It's just ridiculous. The broadcaster's favourite team gets to open the season again. And the great thing about it, if we're going to try and find positives in it, is that for, I think this is the third season in a row it's backfired on them, or the fourth season in a row maybe it's backfired on them, and they've got off to a sticky start, and we've had a chance to capitalise the following day. But still, it is a drag to watch us play after them. We're the title-winning team. Eric, but on you go, mate.
Yeah, I mean, it is ridiculous now that, as you said, we're looking at the fourth season in a row now where I think where we have had to play second fiddle and, you know, as the champions play our game directly after theirs the following day, which to me is a bit ridiculous. But again, look, that shows the favouritism towards the team from Ibrox, and we all, you know, there's nothing shocking about it anyway, put it that way. And as you can sound, I sound a bit hoarse today, and I am hoarse because I did a lot of shouting yesterday at the television screen in my supporters club. and a lot of it was out of sheer frustration, to be honest. And I mean, if you were to ask me, it looked as if we just took off from where we finished at the back end of last season. And that was very much a similar performance against St Mirren as it was in the closing game of the season. Obviously, look, we got the win out of it. We've got the 3 points on the board. We're in second place behind Hibs in the table. That's all positive. What wasn't positive was the performance, and we can't say that it was. I said it to you guys. I put it into our group chat yesterday where I said that, you know, the worrying thing was that there was nothing tactically different that we could look at. But kind of when I've looked back on the highlights today and I've looked at the game, I mean, I also feel that there's an element of restriction there for Brendan Rodgers because of what he has to work with. And the front line, it isn't good enough. It just, at the moment, it isn't good enough. And for the first time, as you said there, I'm going to actually speak out against Adam Ida. Adam Ida had a hatful of chances yesterday. The guy should have had a minimum of a brace at the game yesterday. And I kind of got to the point of asking myself before he was taken off, how many chances did this guy need? And I suppose to a degree, last season, you know, we said, oh, look, he went through a barren spell, and then he broke that barren spell and he finished out the season very strong. And he got the 20 goals that we predicted he'd get. But that seems to be the thing with Ida. He has to break his duck, and then as soon as he breaks his duck, he starts scoring. But the thing is, considering where we are now, we need him to hit the ground running. And he didn't, by any stretch of the imagination yesterday, hit the ground running anyway. Yang was his usual industrious self, running around the place like a headless chicken and no end product. Dyson, if you ask me, was a little bit off the pace. He was himself, you know, he fluffed his lines a couple of times. He sent in some poor balls. He obviously had that chance at the end of the game to put us 2-0 up. And look, fantastic tactic from the St. Mirren player to stop him from scoring, but he should have pulled the trigger a little bit early because he surely knew that there was two defenders bearing down on him. But overall, Benjamin Nygren, okay, I'd give him a 6 out of 10 if I was to look at the way he started. He could have had a goal in the first half, only for, you know, that fantastic save by Shamal George. But again, a lot of industry, a lot of work, a lot of running. But other than that, I didn't see a whole pile to stand out. He didn't set the world alight, we'll put it that way. But then again, it's his first game, you know, in the big time, we'll say, in the real sort of games where things matter, you know. So it's going to be obviously a while before we see the end product there, or, you know, before he beds in properly and we can see what he can deliver. But overall, for me, it was a frustrating performance. We needed an element of luck in the end to get the result. We got that element of luck because ultimately it was a deflection from Luke McCowan. What can you say about Luke McCowan? He always seems to come up with the goods when you need him most. We did have a discussion about him last season, and I said it, and people said maybe I was being a little bit premature when I said that he could be a future captain. He definitely has the leadership skills anyway. He definitely cares about his role and he cares about the club. Again, maybe I'm being a bit premature now in saying it, but I feel definitely he's one for the future at Celtic. But there was just something off about yesterday's performance. Well, Jesus, I'm probably understating it by saying just something off. It was just off. It was off. And it should have been a hell of a lot better. But it cannot. It can't be. That's the problem with the front line that we have, with the wing options that we have. We cannot expect. The problem is if we come up against bigger, tougher teams. I mean, I put it this way. Are you guys confident if it is Slaven Bratislava or this Kazakhstan team that we come up against? You know, that if it is the Kazakh side, it's a long, long trip to go out and play in their neck of the woods. Fairly tiring for the team. The last time when we was at Shakhtar Karagandy, we played. We had to go. It was a long, long journey out to play at their ground. And then obviously we're up against David Strelic if we play Slaven Bratislava. And the front line that we had against them in the opening game of the Champions League was a hell of a lot stronger than the front line that we have now. That's for sure. Look, we've got the 3 points. That's the positive. We had to grind out the result. I think if you asked anybody before that game kicked off, did we expect we'd have to grind out the result? I'd say the answer would be yes. I think everybody felt, because of the front line and the wing issues that we have, that we would have had to grind out the result. I had hoped for better from Adam Ida. We didn't get it, but we need it. So, you know, a lot of people have been giving me stick for sticking up for the guy, but I'll call it like it is. He should have done better yesterday. It's that simple. And he didn't. I expected a better performance for him, and we didn't get it. He always says next week, let's hope he does step up and he does perform better against Aberdeen, because that's going to be a tough one. That's going to be a tough one. And I suppose, look, we'll see. They're playing Hearts this evening. We'll see how that pans out. But definitely that trip to Pataudry is already concerning me a bit. I don't know about you guys, but it's concerning me.
Yeah, it should be concerning all of us, I think. Especially as there doesn't seem to be any signs of life at the moment in terms of transfers. We certainly cannot. Certainly don't think we can go into that game and do what we did against St Mirren, where we're depending on bringing a 33-year-old James Forrest off the bench to make a difference. And if we're chasing something late in the game, bringing on Johnny Kenny to do it. No harm with Johnny Kenny, but asking him at this stage to come on and start saving games, I mean, it was outrageous enough having him come on to save a domestic treble last season. And if there was one silver lining from that result that day, it was that we thought, surely we will solve these problems. Surely we will get our act together and we'll go out and spend some money. We had a fair idea, I think, that Nicholas Coombe was going to leave. And there would be plenty of money to solve these problems, but I just cannot understand what the hell we're doing. Absolutely mental, man. Absolutely mental. But, Joe, what do you think? What are you thinking?
The result was the symptom of the problems at the club. The manager, after losing to Ajax, questioned the ambition of the club, and there's been no answer. And there never will be an answer. So the manager, it's horrendous, because I remember the first time around. Remember the game against Hearts, I think it was before they played and lost to AEK Athens. The team that was selected was horrific, and folk are saying, oh, that's him sending a message to the board. But if a manager needs to send messages to the board through the team sheet, you're in some mess. these things should be discussed. They should be sorted out. And the board will not support Brendan Rodgers. We know that there's somebody in the board that absolutely detests Brendan Rodgers and be quite happy to see him fall. The dangerous game they're playing is they think Brendan Rodgers can deliver success against all odds. He did it this first season when he was presented with seven dud signings from Matt Lowell. So Rodgers is getting a little of his own back. Yang should be nowhere near the Celtic team. I don't think he once went forward yesterday. Every time he got the ball, he wanted to cut inside. If Celtic don't have four wingers on form, they're struggling. Stephen Robinson is a good manager. I hope that when Celtic go away to Karat or Slovan Bratislava, I hope they put on a performance like St Mirren did yesterday. You do whatever it takes, and that was the way to get a result. St Mirren's last two games at Celtic Park, they were 1-0 up after 85 minutes in May, and they were drawing nothing each after 85 minutes yesterday. That's pretty good going. That's a manager getting the best out of his team. If we don't have wingers, Maeda was short of form. Ida is a bit of a confidence guy, and he need to be on the moon not to know that there's plenty of Celtic fans gunning for him. He's a target painted in his back by a few messengers, and he's to blame for all ills. And it's only that he's a young, he's 22, 23, he's young. He's just his first pre-season at Celtic. Henrik Larsson sometimes went through games and never scored goals. I'm not comparing him to him. Mo Bangura played a lot of games and never scored goals, and so did various others. So strikers have that. First game of the season, you might not score a goal. It happens. But Ida is a decent striker, and if we had two good wingers on form, he'd be doing a lot better. But there's interesting things. I mean, playing Yang, I'm sure there's people inside Celtic that knew that Yang was going to Norwich. It seems to me that Rodgers has put a hold in that. It was interesting that Telio, Rodgers seems to have put a hold in that transfer, and he wasn't good enough to be on the 20-man squad yesterday. Inamura had done more than enough in pre-season matches to suggest that he should be the backup left-back to Kieran Tierney, but I suspect Rodgers decided, I'll put Trusty on the bench, I'll put him on. He knew Tierney was never going to play 90 minutes. Trusty on central defence and Liam Scales to left back. So all these things, in an ideal world, Brendan Rodgers wouldn't be anywhere near these things. There's the famous picture from the first game of last season when you've got O'Reilly, Kyogo and Kuhn having a wee laugh celebrating a goal. All of them, I suspect none of them were watching it on the telly yesterday. We were watching it and it wasn't pretty viewing. The squad's in a bad state. There's 10 days to go until the Champions League deadline. Absolutely no indication that anyone inside the club other than Brendan Rodgers is bothered or interested. There might be one token signing before then. There's only two matches to play before the first Champions League playoff tie. We are a lot weaker than we are going into Slovan Bratislava. We went into Slovan Bratislava the game, having beat Phil Clement's mob 3-0, and then beat the Hearts 2-0, and then going in with a bit of confidence that Champions League game. We've got Aberdeen and Falkirk before we play the Champions League qualifier. The manager needs four wingers. Maeda is one of them. There's no one else on the left. James Forrest is the other, a 34-year-old, a great impact sub. James Forrest, 65, 60, 70 minutes is fantastic to bring on, but you've got to have somebody on before him that's softening up teams, punishing them, making defenders struggle. So there's lots to be worried about. If Celtic do make it into the Champions League, I don't think there's going to be much strengthening, if any. And that could make the domestic games in the back of Champions League matches very difficult. St Mirren and other teams have seen, St Mirren have shown other teams what to do. Aberdeen, they'll play a similar game on Saturday. They'll be like the Scottish Cup final, no particular interest in it. And there's a good chance the game will be level or there'll be one goal in it and on the hour mark. And then it's all to play for in the last half hour. So, there's a lot of things need to be done, but it just seems that there's a standoff. Brendan Rodgers wants one thing, The board showed no signs of want to support him, and the result of that standoff is seen on the park, on the performances. So, as ever from me, there's not much to be cheery about, but we'll watch it played out. So, there's not meant. They scored a goal. Luke McCown, Mel Dunne came on. He's always worth a goal. He saved the day. It would have been carnage if he hadn't scored, but it's a very small mercy. On the back of winning four league titles against St Mirren at home, a couple of weeks away from a Champions League playoff, you should be doing a hell of a lot better. Instead, we were grateful for a 1-0 win over St Mirren. So that's my miserable first contribution to the show.
I've got a question, please. Is it this our fault? As in the fault of the supporters. You guys know I'm a big movie buff, right? So if the regulars will forgive me, I'll have a little diversion into one of my favourite films. Full Metal Jacket, Hartman, the drill instructor, is unable to motivate Private Pyle to be a good Marine. And he finally snaps when he finds the famous jelly donut in the Foot Locker. And he gets the whole, he's done in the barracks and he lines everywhere up in front of the bunks. And he tells them to get on the flare, start doing push-ups. And he tells them that he has failed because they have not helped him. Because as his squad mates, it is their job, to give Private Pyle his motivation. And that's when he tells them, whenever he fucks up, I will punish all of you. So is Rogers sending us a message and saying, I need help convincing these guys? You, the fans, have not given these people their proper motivation. Should we be doing more to help the manager and expressing our disgust? Should we be making more noise? And I don't mean the three of us, because we're down our bit. But the fans in general, the fans as a whole.
No, absolutely not. It's the manager's job. If a club isn't interested in supporting and backing him, there's naff all that supporters can do. Booing or shouting Lowell, whatever, at a game against St Mirren makes no difference. It might make them uncomfortable for 10, 15 minutes, but it'll soon be prawn sandwiches and ho, ho, ho.
It's more uncomfortable than they felt in the last few years. So how do we know that will work?
They're not uncomfortable, not remotely. Life is great for them.
They're not uncomfortable because we've not made them uncomfortable. We have not given them their proper motivation.
What would you suggest? Shouting? They don't care. They've got a great manager who's delivered success on the park, on the balance sheet.
They've never been to a game and they had 60,000 fans telling them to get to. They haven't heard that. They've never heard that. We don't know that would not do some good. We don't know that it would not work. They've never been
James, under that pressure. You couldn't mark these guys, Nick, with a blowtorch. I mean, they, like, I agree to a point. I agree with what Joe was saying. They don't care. I mean, if they cared about the club, Brendan Rodgers wouldn't be in the position he's in right now in terms of his front line. If they cared, they clearly don't care. But like the simple fact is, I kept getting comments today on my blog. Where was the protest yesterday? Where were the fans that were speaking out against the board? And it was only because in some of the blogs that I've written, I've suggested that fans need to speak up. And for me, yeah, yesterday was about respecting John Clark, and it was the opening game of the season. It shouldn't be about calling the board out. I reckon there might have been a bit of, you know, people and fans being pissed off if we had gone out of the game nil all. You know, if it finished up nil all, there'd have been a few disgruntled fans in the stand. But the problem is, people aren't going to start getting disgruntled until such time as these guys come under pressure. And the only way that these guys are going to come under pressure is if results start going against us. And none of us wants that. And as I said, it's a catch-22. It's actually a catch-22 for the likes of us. Because we want to see something happen. We want to see some sort of change happen within the club. But in order for that to happen, shit has to happen. And shit that we don't like has to happen.
and shit similar to 2021. And like, that's what needs to happen. We all know that, you know, in 2021, Peter Lawwell's position became untenable because of what happened. But does any, you ask any of us, do we want to go down the road like that again? Do we want to go down a trophyless season again? Do we want to, none of us wants to face into that. But at the same time, we want to see change. So
how was this position made on?
So the question you got to ask is, where's the balance? How do we do it without, you know, losing ground as a team, losing ground in the Champions League, losing ground in the league? Because in reality, the only thing that is going to piss off fans and get fans, if you remember two seasons ago when we started out after that debacle of a transfer window with Mark Lowell, remember the nil-all draw against St Johnstone? That was only a couple of games into Brendan Rodgers' new tenure. And fans were getting pissed off then because we drew nil-all at home to St Johnstone. You know, there was a fair bit of grief coming from the stands that day, but that was directed towards the team and the manager when it should have been, you know, we know where it should have been directed. But all I'm saying is that it's results. Poor results are the only thing that are going to piss off the fans. As you said yourself on Saturday, you felt the board was off the hook after the Ibrox result, you know, after they drew Motherwell. You felt that, yeah, you felt that got them off the hook, you know? So, but the reality is they can only get off the hook for so long. And they're just pulling the rug from under Brendan Rodgers' feet now at the moment. They've systematically weakened the squad. We have started the season, and I hate repeating myself, we started the season yesterday weaker than we finished it against Aberdeen. And it showed. It showed.
A lot of people are arguing that point. That we're weaker. I've seen plenty of people online arguing that point.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they're arguing about. It's obvious that we're weaker. Very clearly weaker. We're certainly weaker than we started January last season. January this year. We're certainly weaker than that. But there are a lot 100%. Of people who don't believe that we are. There's a lot of people who refuse to believe that we're weaker. And I don't.
Sure, I mean, how could you not see that yesterday?
I don't know which piece of the jigsaw they're not seeing properly. But the manager disagrees with them, by the way, and the manager's on the record as having said that. And again, you know, people can try and convince us all they want, and people can post comments on our blogs basically accusing us of talking shit and whatever. But we're not the ones who've got to convince guys. You've got to convince the manager of this club who sees exactly how we see it. And has increasingly shown that he is willing to say that. I mean, he sounded pretty pissed off after the game yesterday when he was asked about it. And he said, look, I don't want to talk about it. I'm not interested in discussing it. But I would prefer that Rodgers was interested in discussing that. And I would prefer Rodgers was discussing it every single time in front of it. Every single time he sits in front of the media. I don't want Rodgers to be in a place where he's basically just resigned to this. I don't want Rodgers resigned to this. I want Rodgers to fight with every breath in his body to change this. But I think he needs help from us. And I don't think he's getting enough support from the stands. That was my point. That's what I was basically trying to say.
I wrote an article on Saturday that, you know, I touched on his Holy Trinity quote from the first season in 2017, where he said there was a fantastic bond between the team, the fans, and the management.
Yes.
And I really believe that for Brendan Rodgers this season, the Holy Trinity needs to be as tightly knit as it can possibly be. I believe, you know, that, look, the border over there, they're over in one side, and the fans, the team, and the manager are over on another side. We all know, well, those of us who are astute enough to know, that the board are really, they're really isolating themselves with the way they're behaving at the moment. And it's like, I've been constantly getting a load of comments from, you know, at the risk of, you know, calling them, we shouldn't be calling them happy clappers, people are saying, but I'm getting a lot of comments from happy clappers saying, but look at how many trophies that Peter Lawwell has delivered since he's been at Celtic since 2003. Oh, and that really winds me up. Yeah, that winds me up. It's like I said in my article, I wrote an article yesterday and I said, whenever anybody refers to the Jock Steen era and the nine in a row and the European Cup win and the Lisbon Lions, it's not, you know, Robert Kelly and Desmond White that they speak of. Nobody says that Robert Kelly and Desmond White delivered those trophies. So why do people feel at this...
And nobody would ever suggest that they shouldn't.
Yeah, but why is it that any time people are trying to defend the board, it's always, well, since Peter Lawwell has been at Celtic, he's delivered all these trophies. No, he hasn't. It's Martin O'Neill who's done that. It's Gordon Strachan who's done that. It's Neil Lennon who's done that. It's Ange Postecoglou who's done that. It's Brendan Rodgers who's done that. And the hundreds of players that played in the better part of this century. They're the guys who delivered those trophies. Peter Lawwell and his board, they're the custodians of the club. It is their job and should have been their job to support the team and give the team the finance and the players that they needed to win those trophies. And we all know we could have done a hell of a lot better. We could have done a hell of a lot better in Europe, and we didn't. And we could have done a hell of a lot better in the seasons where the Ibrox side weren't even in the league. We had the top tier of our stand closed because
in spite of them.
Yeah, 100%. It's still in spite of them.
They left them. Then that's someone.
James, your mic is very poor. James, is there something? Is there something wrong with it?
About these people, this is what does my not about them. They're defending the current strategy on the basis that Rodgers somehow failed last summer, right? Some failure, by the way, to get us through that Champions League group, to almost get us past Bayern Munich, to get us to within penalty kicks of a domestic treble. That's some failure. But those three guys, if you take the least effective one and the most entrusted, he probably played more games than all seven in the sum up 2023, 2024 signings combined. So, you want to talk about transfer market failure? You want to talk about people who piss club money up against the wall? They did it. Absolutely, they did it. And I'll go back again to what I said about Ida. I mean, Ida was really poor yesterday, right? Ida looks like a guy who really is feeling the weight of that transfer fee. And it's really unfair because the player is not responsible for the transfer fee. And neither, by the way, is Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers made it clear he wanted Ida signed. It was our board that messed about and waited until Kyogo was injured. And we had no choice but to go and sign Ida before they made a move, at which time Norwich felt completely justified in sticking £2 million, £3 million on the transfer fee. It's ridiculous. Now, John Paul, do you know something? I'm sick and tired of hearing that shit as well. You know, the manager gets to decide who he picks for any given game. The manager does. Know the directors, know the fans. The manager makes that call, right? Rodgers left the guys on the bench. Yeah, he did, right? Rodgers has a certain way of looking at this stuff that you pick the tools to do the job on the day. And so Rodgers will rotate the squad. Rodgers will choose certain people on certain days against certain opponents because that's what gets us the win. So it's absolutely ridiculous to be pointing the finger at Rodgers leaving guys on the bench. Let the board worry about crap like that. And they should worry about their own performance rather than his, because he's actually on point. He's actually getting his job done. It's other people at the club who ain't getting theirs done. It's absolutely ridiculous to be blaming Rodgers for this. And I knew Rodgers was going to get stick for that decision yesterday, leaving two of them on the bench. I knew he was going to get stick for that, and I knew that the stupid-ass arguments would get deployed. But Thiago Holmes, no even at Celtic. Kwon's just been sold. Telio, forget it. That's a joke. All three defenders that were signed in that window have left. They're gone and they ain't coming back. That's what you call a transfer window disaster. Last summer was certainly not that. Why is it worse to spend £20 million on three players than £20 million on seven? Not one of whom is worth a damn. Absolutely ridiculous. And least effective is Engels. Engels is still the youngest player in the Celtic squad. The youngest player in the squad. And Engels will make us twice what we paid for him, easily, comfortably, when he leaves. Twice what we paid for him. And that, by the way, is what the balance sheet nerds are greeting about. Because we signed these players for such big fees, there's no resale value in them. And I'll make you a bet right now. I'll bet we sell Ida at a profit. I'll bet we sell Engels for twice what we paid. Trust me, we'll end up in the same kind of bracket as guys like Carter Vickers and that. We'll probably never get a resale value. But if he's a player who keeps it, Bratislava or whoever it is in the next round of the Champions League and gets us out of the groups, that's his transfer fee paid as well. So, really honestly, these guys have done more, the three of them between them, than all seven of the board signings the summer before. And I said I didn't think that you would see Inamura ever play first team football for Celtic. You might, you very well might. but he will not be a regular. Yamada, we will see. Nygren looks like a good signing. Osman, don't be surprised if he's out on loan and you never see him. So again, this window, if you're going to judge on how many games players play, I think this one, in the fullness of time, as it stands right now, will be seen as another failure, unless we make big changes at. I mean, I really don't get some of the nonsense that gets talked about this. I saw one post today talking about Brendan Rodgers' signings being a disaster. That Twitter rant included Jota, who is injured and has by no means been a disaster. It missed out Nicholas Kuhn. I wonder why. It never mentioned a single one of the summer signings from 2023. I wonder why. And these are Celtic fans pushing this agenda that Rodgers can't spot a player. Brendan Rodgers can't spot a player. That's why Brendan Rodgers has not had a successful career anywhere, because he can't spot a player, because he's terrible at his job. Such bullshit. Honestly, such bullshit.
James, let me speak.
Yeah, let
Joe
speak, James.
James, I think it may be a slight problem with your mic, but I have got the stats off the top of my head. We played 10 Champions League matches last season. Arne Engels started 9 and came on a sub and won. Austin Trusty started 9 and came on a sub and won. Adam Ida started 3 and came on a sub and 7 of them. Adam Ida scored 3 goals and created the goal against Young Boys Bern, which allowed Celtic to go through and created another full house, another money spinner for the board. At the same time, last season, in the SPFL, the 7 duds signed by Matt Lowell in the summer of 2023 started 13 SPFL matches. Naroki got 3, Palma got 1, and elimination tells me that Yang got the other 9. So there's quite a few substitute appearances by Yang and Palma and things, but those guys contributed nothing. But all the happy clappers and all those that follow the messengers, they'll slag off and slag off and slag off. 3 guys that contributed a lot to a successful Champions League campaign, and they will not go near the duds signed in 2023. Good luck to all of those guys. You don't turn down the chance to play for Celtic. I don't think any of them gave less than 100%, but they were clearly miles short. You were talking about they're gone. Naroki is on loan, Palma is on loan. So whoever's the manager next season, and I wouldn't put a penny in Brendan Rodgers being the manager next season, will be welcoming those 2 guys back, and all these happy clappers will be telling you it's like 2 new signings. You know what it's like to be at Celtic. They've already got experience of it. They were out playing at the top level at Lech Poznan in Poland, and God knows who, and is it Hanover 96? Sorry to anyone, any Hanover supporters looking in. Hanover, I think they finished 7th in Bundesliga 2 last season, and their star signing in January last year was a guy on loan called Rabi Matondo. That's the levels. So it's boring and repetitive to go over this, but Ida, Engels and Trusty played a massive part in last season's success. None of them were involved in pre-season training, and no matter how much people want to go after them, they contributed to Celtic last season. As you say, they could all probably be sold for a profit. Certainly nothing like the cumulative losses that we're going to suffer from the duds signed in 2023, all of them in 5-year contracts. They're not even halfway through their contract. So that's a mini rant from me. Unfortunately, it's factual. So I'll leave it at that. But those 3 guys have contributed, and it's pretty tragic that thanks to a couple of messengers, everybody else is piling on and pointing the finger and slagging them off. They did a lot for Celtic.
Joe, that was excellent, mate. Thank you for that. They're excellent stats. I need to bear them in mind, and we should keep hammering them across over and over and over again. So let's turn from our club and its current woes for a while here, and let's talk about the clown castle at Park. That was astonishing. absolutely astonishing. We had a family hanging. We watched the second half, and a bar in Paisley. And having watched the first half, and watched much of the first half before we left, I thought that Motherwell hadn't quite shown enough adventurism. They sat back too much and let the Ibrox club have control of the ball, and went in 1-0 down at half-time. But the second half was like watching a completely transformed team. And again, the Ibrox clubs have been very lucky. They've faced two clubs so far without a proper penalty box predator, otherwise they'd have lost all three of those games. Motherwell's goal was coming whichever way you looked at it. And if you go and have a look at the Ibrox fan forums and the review of that game, they were dreading it because they saw it a mile off and all. They were just waiting on it, most of them. But as unbelievably poor as the performance was, and I was genuinely shocked by how completely they were outplayed by Motherwell in the second half. Genuinely shocked. Far more incredible than that was the manager at full time. I was stunned to hear him so completely berate his players. And
but was he wrong, James?
Huh?
But was he wrong? He didn't speak a word of the light.
He wasn't wrong, but it's not exactly the best timing in the world for that. I mean, I was writing about this today, and I was talking about how the Roman army gave us like their modern version of what disciplinarian culture looks like. Some of the things that they used to do to the soldiers who got out of line were pretty unbelievable, right? But I don't even think that the Roman generals went straight to whipping people and crucifying people and decimating cohorts and legions, you know, just because of minor infractions. It took something pretty serious before they went that far. And for a football boss to actually do that, he's brand new players. And this is the second time since he's took over that he's actually read the riot act. The first time he made them do double sessions and all that on the training ground because he was pissed off with their attitude. And now he's come in the dressing room and he's basically called them egotists, said some of them on the try-in. And it's a hell of a step to go for the quiet chat about we're all in this together and let's try and pull together and this is an important season to you are a bunch of bastards who are going to lose me my job. It's a remarkable, remarkable step to take because as I asked in the piece this morning, what if it fails? What if you go in there and you play basically the desperado card, right? And you go in and you start shouting ball at people and you start trying to instill rule by fear. What happens when rule by fear doesn't work? And it won't work because as I said, you cannot crucify people in a dressing room just because they don't do what you tell them on the pitch. You can't even decimate the team. The best you can do is put a couple of them in the reserves for a few weeks and there goes any resale value that they have. You can't tear up contracts. So really, the only thing you can do is appeal to their personal pride and try and convey yourself as confident and worthy of respect. But if you're already at the point where you're shouting the ball at people, you're never going to get that respect. That's game over. I mean, I genuinely think he's dug his own grave already, which is amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. Joe's nodding. Joe, what do you think? I mean, yeah. I it's a remarkable thing for a first-time manager today. For a manager...
It was fantastic. The result was good enough. The performance was good enough. But nothing at all was... comparable with what the manager said afterwards. It was absolute madness, but if you're not a loyal Bear, then it was fantastic. Chris Sutton and Chris Boyd could hardly believe it. It was utterly bonkers. As Eric butted in, yes, everything he said was true. However, if you're the manager, you've got to try and manage these guys. You've got to try and get a tune out of them. Try and coax them through. And then once you can ditch them, you can say what the hell you like about them. But you don't say that because you've got a petted lip because your team has just drawn one each with Motherwell. Motherwell cut through them fantastically in the second half, but their finishing was on a par with Panathinaikos. It was utterly woeful. They were barely able to get a shot on goal, and fittingly, their main striker was Greek. So, apologies to Greek people. Apologies to Hanover 96 fans earlier. But Panathinaikos were rotten, and the Greek striker for Motherwell on Saturday was also rotten. But fortunately, we got an exhibition of walking football from Captain Disappointed and Kieran Dowell, and a Motherwell guy that was sitting in his backside, stood up in the penalty box and slotted an equaliser past Super Jack Butland. There's another one. Super Jack on club media after the game says players need to get the finger out. Maybe if he'd get the finger out 3, 4, 5 months ago, Phil Clement would still be in a job. Or Phil Clement might have won the league the season before, but there's no one more arrogant and conceited than Jack Butland. But when getting all these managers mixed up, when Russell Martin talked about egos, I don't think there's many egos smaller than Russell Martin's. Russell Martin is utterly full of himself. A bang average career, managing at MK Dons, Swansea and Southampton is decent, but he seems to think he's peak Pep, and he can just go in and impose his way. And he had a good media conference today. He backtracked in a lot of it. He explained that when he questioned folks' egos, when he was asked about questioning the egos, he just meant to really give them a cuddle and help them out. He's going to help. He's going to hold their hand. And don't expect 3 or 4 changes. If MD gets dropped, it doesn't mean that they're bombed out permanently. It just means he wants a bit more pace in the team. So it was fantastic stuff this afternoon. There's shades of Michael Beale about him. Just somebody so consumed by themselves. He clearly loves talking about himself. Hopefully, we built up our hopes too often to have too much expectations for Pilsen tomorrow, but at some point it's going to happen to them. They're going to get the defeat. I was going to say a hammer. I'll take a defeat. The defeat that's been brewing for long enough, but one reason or another they managed to get through it. But the performance, there was no power pace. There was nothing about their second half. Motherwell were pretty ordinary. But they get lots of encouragement in the second half. They played a bit of decent football. Their finishing was horrendous. They got a point. But I'll repeat, the icing on the cake by some distance was Russell Martin destroying the players that he's dependent on tomorrow night. And we talked about St Mirren. If they lose out to Pilsen, they'll play St Mirren the weekend before they're due to play us. St Mirren at Paisley. I would be surprised if St Mirren don't take something from them. So it's looking good in that front. And a lot of people say, how can you slag them off? We've got our own problems. Well, actually, you can deal with two issues at the same time. Celtic have got problems, but we can also have a right good laugh at them. And when Captain Disappointed led the serial losers over to the away support at the end of the game on Saturday, it was shades of Dens Park. The abuse was fantastic. So we can enjoy their problems. It doesn't mean that we forget ours. It doesn't mean that we lower our expectations. But it was a right good laugh on Saturday, and fingers crossed we'll get more of it tomorrow. But certainly have a look at today's media conference. Russell Martin was backtracking. He just wants to give players a hug, wants them to see the love, and they'll all come out. Everything will be happy in the end, and the lads have been doing really well. The lads have been fantastic. The lads this, that, the next thing. But I suspect somebody's tapped Russell Martin on the shoulder and said, see these guys you've just slaughtered? We've got to try and sell some of them. So shut up and try and get on with it. Eric, well, your turn.
I mean, if he's backtracked on that, that's even worse. That's a show of weakness. Because you can't backtrack on that. You've said your piece, you need to stick to it, or even double down on it if you think you have to. You don't backtrack on it. That really does make you look pathetic. It makes you look unsure of yourself at best, and at worst, absolutely pathetic and weak. And I don't know how he gets it. I genuinely don't know how he builds trust and respect in the dressing room. He's behaving like that. That's incredible. I did not know that. It certainly doesn't surprise me, but my God. Eric.
I was watching the game on Saturday, and you know, as I...
He's writing previous years, right? as you know, right, I did the season 15 TV review, right? Trying to review their latest craziness as if it's a prestige TV show. And when you actually look back on some of the highlights from the previous seasons, you've had the complete disintegration of Philip Clermont to be in this Belgian sophisticate to the guy who was doing the funny walk during a press conference as he unraveled. Before that, you had Mad Van Bronckhorst absolutely doing his nut at every little thing and basically saying that the club was skint and the club had tied his hands. And before that, you had Michael and his talking mole, which was among the most bizarre things I have ever seen from an Ibrox boss. Every one of his press conferences was an absolute belter. And there was material you could have mined for months just for each and every one of them. Gerard, probably the most arrogant person who sat in that dugout since Dick Advocaat, and he was always good for a laugh. Before that, there was Pedro addressing the players from the bushes, addressing fans from the bushes after they'd been knocked out in the Europa League. I mean, is this ever going to end? Are the banners here just going to roll and roll and roll and roll? I mean, are we going to get this for the next 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's...
that maniac manager after another, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. It's like when I watched the game on Saturday, I mean, for me, the second half, obviously, like we discussed, I couldn't believe the way that they literally invited Motherwell onto them, and Motherwell just kept coming at them in waves and waves and waves. And I messaged you guys and I said, like, it was like watching Panathinaikos all over again because their finishing was so poor. But yeah, like Joe said, the icing on the cake was the Russell Martin rant at the end. But as I listened to it, and the thing about it is, if you look at it again, he doesn't lose the plot as such. He's actually very he's very calm in the way that he's expressing himself in the whole throughout the whole interview. And I started thinking to myself when I was watching it, like, everything he's saying actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Everything, like, I mean, like, there's nothing in there. There's nothing in there that he said that's wrong. Obviously, the consequences of what he has said is going to be the issue. But it's going back to what we've always said, you know, no matter who goes through the walls of Ibrox or goes through the door of Ibrox and up the marble staircase, insanity permeates the walls over there. So it's going to take you over in some way, shape or form whenever you go in there. And for some reason, it's taken over Russell Martin very early because we have the rant on Saturday and then we have the press conference today where he's talking about wanting to cuddle the guys and all the rest of it. And it's all just everything. It's like I said yesterday in my article, insanity permeates the walls of Ibrox. And Peter Lawwell permeates the walls of Celtic Park. And that's the two things that permeate the walls of each stadium. And no matter who takes the hot seat, as you alluded to at Ibrox, we just get utter madness from them. We get utter insanity from them eventually. I just didn't expect that it would be this early. But what did get to me was how calm, cool and collected Russell Martin was in the way that he spoke on Saturday. And that everything he said made absolute 100% sense. And so I kind of thought about it afterwards and I said, well, when are you going to say it? When are you going to call out the shite? You know? And like, it's clear that he's going to play an expansive game where he's going to invite teams onto him. And like, if he comes up against a good Hearts side, Aberdeen side, a decent Hibs side, these guys will play fucking havoc with him. Like, they will just tear him apart. And if any squad outside of ours, I mean, we're poor enough in the front line, but if there's a team out there who has a fucking prolific goal scorer and he comes up against them, this is going to be like, it's going to be a duck shoot. Like, they're going to get, I could see them copping a hammering from another side out with us during the season if they play that expansively and that openly and they invite teams onto them, because they really, really invited Motherwell onto them in that second half. So yeah, I mean, it's top class entertainment. The banter years are just in full flow, and the Reverend Ethan W there, he said he thought this was a healthy podcast. Yes, there is a lot of Rangers talk. Weird. Well, what are we going to know? As Joe said, we can talk about the problems we have in Celtic Park, but we can sure should talk about the problems over there and enjoy them to give us a bit of comic relief. That's for sure.
Is it clear to you guys the players that he is referring to? When he talks about, because the most interesting thing he said, I think, wasn't even so much about the Eagles or slagging people for not running hard enough, but he like dropped it into the conversation that they've only had one bid for a player, which is why I think that there's been some kind of transfer bluff that's gone awry, whether it's Jeffrey wondering where the Chelsea move is, or the Real Madrid move, if you believe some of them are ludicrous stuff, or Eggerman basically demanding to know why he's not been sold to a French team. There does seem to be some disharmony in the dressing room, which was more than just hinted at when he was talking about Dessers being the only player that they have a concrete bid for. Oh, and look at him, he's out there running about, you know, headless chickens running about and all. But we'll spare him the whole thing on Dessers. I mean, at the end of the day, he's the guy who's fielding Danilo. He's the guy who's fielding Kieran Dowell. He's the guy who's still picking James Tavernier and playing Max Ahrens. Although I don't think Max Ahrens will be any better player when he's played in his proper position. I had to laugh at Radio Scotland the other day when we were on the way to the pub and listening to the last few minutes commentary, the first half, when they were saying, oh, he was on loan in Spain last year. He didn't fucking play. He hardly played. So, you know what I mean? He may as well have been sunning himself on a Spanish beach for all the football that he actually got. I mean, he already looks like an absolute car crash of signing. And he's starting out of position instead of the Brazilian boy wonder. That's a mess of a club. An absolute mess of a club. And they've signed the third winger of the day of the transfer window, when there are other areas of that team that are gasping for signings and desperately need reinforcing, and they've gone out and signed a third winger. I find it genuinely astonishing. I don't think there's much more coherence to the way their team's being built than there is to the way yours is being built. Now, one of the guys there said he's talking about Raskin. Well, I did hear some stuff. We did hear some stuff towards the end of last season, the start of the window, that Raskin had interest in various clubs in various countries. But, I mean, if Raskin's and his agent actually believe that and actually think that his manager and the board there are the ones standing in the way of some big move that he otherwise would get, he's living in a fantasy land as well. So I was just wondering who the hell the players were. I mean, I'm sure that Raskin's one of them. Dio Mandy, they were saying, because Dio Mandy was one of the guys who get subbed off, and that they may be talking about him. Well, I haven't heard any interest about him either, unless the club has been telling these guys behind closed doors, oh, so-and-so's watching you, so-and-so's watching you, so go out and try and play football. I mean, it's metal. Metal. Joe, what do you think? I mean, who is being singled out here for the criticism? Oh.
Quite clearly, Raska and Dio Mandy. I mean, those two were substituted. So he's got five substitute options. He left Kieran Dowell on. Kieran Dowell is part of the leadership group, as is captain. Yeah. Disappointed. John Souter was left on. So you've got to assume that the guys he was calling out were the guys that were substituted, and that's Raska and Dio Mandy. So. There's your £50 million windfall for the player trading model up in smoke. Nobody comes in throwing money at you when you get substituted against Motherwell and your manager questions your mentality and your ego. So it's very, very much worth the follow-up to watching Saturday's interviews is today's pre-match. He backtracks. It seems as if there's going to be very little changes. Most Bears are desperate for at least four. Captain disappointed that Dowell are the first two out. Aaron should be switched over to right back. Jeffrey in at left back, and a few other changes. Dessers, they're wanting Dessers back in for Danilo, which just says more about Danilo than it does about Dessers. So. Hopefully there's more humour. Well, there's certainly humour. It just depends on the level of humour that we'll be getting from Ibrox in the coming months. But it's interesting. The Daily Record, Keith Jackson and Scott McDermott weren't very complimentary. And they've got a colleague back at the Daily Record called Barry Ferguson. So I suspect there's a little campaign growing already. Barry just needs to sit back, bide his time, not say too much. And at some point, it's going to get overwhelmed, and we'll see if this saves and brings back a real Rangers man, somebody that knows clubs all about, man, gets stuck into them, and plays for that badge, whatever the badge is. So, yep, there's hilarity to be had there. We will not be deflected from the problems at Celtic. We have got a Champions League qualifier that's coming up. It's going to be tighter than it should have been. At the minute, it's looking 50-50. Whoever we're playing are likely to be better than St Mirren. They're likely to have more motivation. They'll have the same prize fund to go for as we have. So Celtic have to do lots of things. We don't expect it because there's a standoff between the manager and the chairman. But at the same time, we can have a look over the wall and have a laugh at the latest manager, the current manager, because he looks as if he can get... I mean, Phil Clement started off as dull as dishwater. For about 3-4 months, he said absolutely nothing. And then they lost at home to Motherwell. Super Jack chucked a couple in and it all fell apart. Russell Martin has got off to an absolute flyer. And hopefully there's more banter classics coming from him tomorrow when Victoria Pilsen are at Ibrox.
And you know something, actually, if they do manage to get past Pilsen, they've got either Red Bull Salzburg or Club Bruges. I can see a tanking there. Mm-hmm. If they from either of those sides.
Yeah.
Let's hope it doesn't go anywhere close to that, Eric.
Yeah.
Right, so last question then, right? We are off to Pittodrie at the weekend. So first, are we going to have any new signings in place for that one? Any new signings in the forward position? As we should surely be able to put the Pussy deal this week in the next couple of days, but nobody up front, John.
No. It'll be the same squad. I think James Forrest might start instead of Yang, and he'll be hoping for more format. Yamada might be an option after an hour, after 70 minutes, rather than Johnny Kenny. Johnny Kenny can still be brought on, but Johnny Kenny's a guy that started one match for Celtic. His other games have been 15 minutes, 20 minutes here and there, so criticism of him is wrong, but he'd be better off going out on loan to Motherwell. He could do. If he'd been at Motherwell on Saturday, we might have been having a bit more fun than just a one each draw. So we'd like changes, but the chances are we'll bring in the guy from Manchester City, and I don't see where he's going to get any games anytime soon, because Aberdeen is not a game to put a defender in for his debut. The Falkirk game is about consolidating the team to go into the Champions League playoff. The Champions League playoffs are pretty important, and then there's a game at Ibrox. So there's very little opportunity to bring in a teenage central defender that's on loan for a season. Perhaps in September he might see some game time, but he's got Scales and Trusty to go alongside Carter Vickers in central defence. We'd like to see things happening up front, but I don't see the standoff melting between Rodgers and the chairman. So I hate this phrase, but it's entirely true in this situation. It is what it is.
What about you, Eric?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I said a couple of weeks back I was concerned about the away fixtures in August, and I'm still concerned about the away fixtures in August. At this moment in time, the way I view it is with the attack and the wing options we have, the days of us hammering teams are a thing of the past at the moment, because we're not going to go out. It's going to be at the current way things are currently, we're going to be grinding out results. 1-0s, 2-1s, 2-0s maybe. But I don't see us going out there and having field days against teams with the current options that we have, because we just don't have the kind of penetration that we had last season. And that's going back to what Joe said. Will we see anything happen between now and the game at Pittodrie? Not a hope. I don't envisage anything happening between now and the game at Pittodrie. So it's going to be a very, very tough season if we don't reinforce the front options, the wingers, and get a striker in. At Pittodrie, we'll grind out a result there if we get a result, but it's going to be very tight, I feel. It'll be a 1-0, a 2-1, something along those lines, but we won't win it by any more than a goal. We went there last season, towards the end of the season, we played a good game, and Johnny Kenny scored his first goal for Celtic. could you see Johnny Kenny scoring his first goal, or, you know, his second goal for Celtic at Pittodrie? You might, I don't know, but I have little to no confidence at the moment in our front line. And I mean, if yesterday's game did not scream to the board how much we need forward reinforcements between the wings and the striking roles, nothing will. Nothing is going to. So it's concerning. If we decide to head into this season with the front line that we have at the moment, it's going to revert back to eventually possibly made it through the middle. And we might have, we might get a striker in before the window closes, but we're not going to have one in time for the European, we have to name the, is it 10 days time we have to name the European squad, Joe? I don't think we're gonna have reinforcements in before then.
Joe, am I right about that?
Yeah, the squad's to be named by the 14th of August. The night before, you can bring in two players. I think the last time we tried that was Joe Inger Berget, who was signed by Ange on loan from Cardiff City. If you resort to bringing in guys the night before a Champions League qualifier, you're in a hell of a mess. But I see one comment up there from David C. I think Lowell's a red herring. It seems more like Desmond. That's the problem. David C, Dermot Desmond doesn't really bother. As long as Celtic are solvent, that's good enough for him. Lowell was appointed CEO in October 2003. Everyone at Celtic appointed since October 2003 was appointed by Peter Lowell. And the current CEO was appointed by Peter Lowell. And everyone inside the club works a certain way. That's why you shouldn't have a CEO for more than 5 or 8 years, not 17 years. So anyone putting forward Dermot Desmond, that's the red herring. Peter Lowell has appointed everyone of significance inside Celtic Park, including the current silent CEO. And, again, all those messengers that I like to put these notions out, they're missing the target deliberately. We know who's responsible for the current state of the club, and it's not the manager and it's not the largest shareholder. His biggest issue is the pin positions at Sandy Lane Golf Course in Barbados tomorrow morning. It's not what Celtic are doing in the transfer market or not doing in the transfer market.
I mean, I'll say on that subject what I've said before. Lowell brings with him, just by being in the building, a lot of controversy and a lot of bitterness, a lot of mistrust, and a really serious perception problem, because he was CEO for so long and had such an iron grip on the club, that even if it were true that Lowell has no influence, his presence brings with it all sorts of perception and trust issues. And not just for the fans, but I would imagine for people working inside the club. And I move to wonder that if he really doesn't do anything, why we're hanging that around our neck for no benefit at all. If he really doesn't do anything, he really doesn't have any influence, then what is the point? We're getting a lot of hassle, we're copping a lot of flack for simply employing the guy who hands out the pens. And that doesn't seem like a worthwhile thing to me at all. So, you know, when I hear that he has no influence, I find it laughable, to be quite honest. Laughable. And it is laughable.
Well, it's like I said yesterday, guys. I said it looks like a Peter Lawwell Celtic. It talks like a Peter Lawwell Celtic. Sells players like a Peter Lawwell Celtic. Spends like a Peter Lawwell Celtic. It is a Peter Lawwell Celtic. I mean, what else can you say? You know, it doesn't look any different. And this is the better part of this century's culture within the walls of Celtic Park. It's the culture that Peter Lawwell created. And the thing about it is people seem to be very quick to say that, oh, yeah, Peter Lawwell has nothing to do with it. He's the team biscuits guy. He's the guy who hands out the pens, so on and so forth. Fair enough. But because everybody who is in the environment of Celtic Park at the moment and on the Celtic board were his placement, they are always reverting back to him for advice. Does anybody not honestly believe that when Michael Nicholson is going through a transfer deal or he's doing a transfer deal, that he's not picking up the phone to Peter Lowell and saying, well, Peter, what do you think I should do here? What should I do here? What do you reckon I should offer them? I mean, Peter Lowell, he learned under Peter Lowell. Peter Lowell was his mentor. So, like, people who don't think he has anything to do with going on at Celtic Park need to wake up and realize, like, there is nothing different about Celtic at the moment than when Peter Lowell was CEO of the club. It's exactly the same. And Michael Nicholson doesn't speak. And he doesn't speak because the only person he really speaks to is Peter Lowell. And he gets all his advice and all his, you know, guidance and everything from Peter Lowell, as far as I'm concerned. So, like, anybody who is thinking that he has nothing to do with anything at Celtic Park is delusional, as far as I'm concerned. He has plenty to do with what's going on at Celtic Park. If Peter Lowell had nothing to do with what's going on at Celtic Park, then Celtic would not be run in the way that it is at the moment. We would be seeing a totally different way of operating. The club would be totally different. We'd be on the front foot all the time. But the fact that it's all his placemen there, it's all his people that are in place at Celtic Park, it's going to be that way as long as he's inside in the building. The only way that Peter Lowell can convince us that he has nothing to do with what goes on at Celtic Park is to retire and leave Celtic Park. And when I say leave Celtic Park, I mean leave Celtic Park. Not work from home like he did the last time he left, because I know on good authority that he was working from home.
Oh, well, sorry. That slipped out there. Apologies. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I keep on hearing this, that it's an emeritus position, it doesn't really matter, and, oh, it's only a ceremonial post. Do it, Rod Stewart. Do it, him. Let him do it. I'll complain bitterly about that, but most other people won't. So what are you going to be particularly controversial? If he doesn't do anything, he doesn't have any influence, get some celebrity fan, get Kevin Bridges in, if you want to avoid all hassle. And you don't let me stamp my feet. Because that's what we're being told. The job doesn't matter because the guy who's in it doesn't have any influence and doesn't have any say. So you could pretty much give anybody that job. And they could hand out the pens at the meetings and open and close the AGM. So I really don't get why we bought ourselves all this hassle to no benefit and created all this mistrust and all this confusion about who actually runs the club. When you could just avoid all of it by literally appointing anybody else. It's an insult to your collective intelligence to believe that the chairman of the club has no influence in the club. It's just an insult. And that would be true no matter who was in that chair. But this guy in particular, who was CEO's, guys have pointed it for 18 years, it just is not terrible. It just doesn't stand up to the remotest scrutiny. And that, I think, is that for tonight, guys. We have gone 15 minutes over the hour.
We have.
And that's what happens when I'm sitting in this chair. I always get ranty about stuff and we always end up overshooting it. So thanks to Eric and Joe for coming on. And thanks to every single one of you for posting and commenting and liking and subscribing and everything else. And include the Ibrox fans on here who come on to offer criticism and accuse us of being obsessed when they're the ones sitting listening to a Three Celtic podcast. Well, I never will understand that argument. So, we'll be back here next Monday in the aftermath of Aberdeen and the aftermath of Ibrox's latest European endeavour. And we will find out whether or not we've got any signings and whether or not there's anything on the horizon. But until then, guys, thank you very much. Joe, you want to do the usual?
No, just the usual. Please come back. Lots of good, mainly good interaction. A few BAMs, a few from the few happy clappers, the balance sheet boys, all those. But overall, there's some good comments, good contributions, good ideas. So please, thanks for watching us live. Later on tonight or tomorrow, if you can come back onto YouTube and add a comment, give it a thumbs up, give it a share, all that sort of stuff. That all helps. That all puts us higher up the food chain, higher up the tree with YouTube, and it gives us a bit more exposure. You might not want more exposure of us. it's once a week, 6:30 on a Monday. And no, You'll read our comments every day of the week, 7 days a week, on our websites. That's Read Celtic, Video Celts, and the Celtic blog. And if you're a happy clapper, go back to your own websites. You're not welcome. We've suffered enough from you lot, and we do not want to. We know where to find you. We know where to get your views. You're not welcome. Goodbye.
And on that note, see you next week, guys.
So you guys hear me all right?